corner of Broadway and Battery. This is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Welcome, welcome. It is wonderful to have you here. We got a great show today, even though we just got some news that is going to affect us on the guest list just a little bit. The Warriors just contacted us to let us know that Steve Kerr will be joining us on Friday, not today, which is unfortunate because we had some questions for Steve Kerr today about the news. Kevin Durant has had his surgery. Welcome to the Damon Bruce Show. Welcome to Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky. It's good to have you. We are still going to bring you Mike Breen, Michael Irvin, the Hall of Famer, the playmaker, not just on NFL OTAs, but we're going to talk some NBA with him. He has been watching the NBA Finals as closely as we have. We got a really good name game for you today with a chance to win some tickets to go see the Rolling Stones down at Levi's Stadium and playing in the other, at least for one more season, Bay Area NFL Stadium. We got a team that's going to be on Hard Knocks, and we're going to talk about that today. It is good to have you here today. Unfortunately, Steve Kerr, a last-minute cancellation. Really, not a cancellation as much as a rescheduling. We will talk to Steve on Friday. And needless to say, if we do talk to Steve on Friday, there's going to be one of two topics that will lead that conversation. Still alive, or that's all she wrote, and Game 6 ended in a way that meant the Warriors did not win it. Tomorrow night, we will see. Good to see you guys both again. A little disappointed and bummed out about this news about Steve Kerr, but we do have some interesting sound and stuff from practice today to get to. Guys, the news that Kevin Durant's surgery today was successful kind of came out of nowhere only because it wasn't released really by the team. It was released by Kevin Durant on his own Instagram page. Now, whether or not that was an agreement that Kevin and the team had,
I just saw a report from Sam Amick that that's exactly what happened.
They
met about it. Kevin said, I'd like to release it myself, and the team said, go for it.
Well, then that absolutely takes out any sort of, is there any interpretation to be gleaned from Kevin releasing this information and not trusting the team to do it? Obviously, that's just poppycock. He just explained what happened.
Well, that doesn't prevent people from making a thing of it.
Make a thing of it?
Oh, no, we shouldn't.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying that people will make a thing of it.
They probably will, but they just diffused it with that information. And you know what? Here's the thing. We now live in a society where you got to diffuse bombs that might be ticking, whether or not you planned on it. So Kevin Durant says on his own Instagram page, and I quote, "What's good, everybody? I wanted to update you all. I did rupture my Achilles. Surgery was today, and it was a success. Easy money. My road back starts now. I got my family and my loved ones by my side, and we truly appreciate all the messages and support people have sent our way. Like I said Monday, I'm hurting deeply, but I'm okay. Basketball is my biggest love, and I wanted to be out there that night because that's what I do. I wanted to help my teammates on our quest for the three-peat. It's just the way things go in the game, and I'm proud that I gave it all I physically could, and I'm proud my brothers got the W. It's going to be a journey, but I'm built for this. I'm a hooper. I know my brothers can get this game 6, and I'll be cheering with Dub Nation while they go do it." So there you go. That is the statement from Kevin Durant. I thought it was, you know, well-crafted all the way around. He touched every single base he needed to as he was rounding the bases. And sounds like day one of recovery is at least off to a decent start. And that's what really today is. Today is day one of recovery. It's not the day he was injured. It's not the night he went down. Today is the day the ticking time bomb between him and his return to the NBA really, really starts. And, you know, so many questions have already been asked about where that return will happen, how he should play his cards until the return. And I really don't know how he should go about it. But if I'm Kevin Durant, if leaving your options open sounded like a good idea when your options seemed limitless, I think leaving your options open is probably the right idea when your options feel a tad bit more limited, don't you?
Well, you should keep your options open no matter what. I mean, that's why options are good. It's why leverage is good. And leverage doesn't come around that often. So when you've got it, you should hold on to it for as long as you can. I mean, he doesn't have to do anything before the end of the month anyway.
I'm not sure. I mean, other than the obvious rehab work he'll likely be doing, I'm not sure the next 2 months for KD have changed that much. Now, obviously, the next 10 months after that have changed a lot. But the next 2 months, I really think his options, if not the same, will be very similar. And I think his decision-making process, if not the same, will be very similar. Because nobody expected Durant to, wherever he ends up, sign another one-and-one deal or, you know, keep kicking the can down the road. The consensus, for whatever it's worth, has been wherever he signs, it's for the long term. And so this decision he's about to make is one he's making within the framework of this is the next 4 or 5 years of my life, not just the next year. So I don't think it changes all that much other than he won't be out there next year. So that team has to consider, are we okay taking a year off?
Look, I don't want to look 5 years down the road. That's always a fool's errand when you come to the world of sports. But if I'm Kevin Durant, the 4 years that come after the next year, that's the easy part. It's the next year that I'm more worried about than anything because
Who do I want to rehab with?
And to me, familiarity sounds a little bit better in this situation than it might have if I didn't need to be familiar with everyone around me. And today, I mean, if any of you wanted to apply any degree of malpractice to the decision that Kevin Durant made or that the Golden State Warriors made or that Dr. Celebrini made, I mean, all of you can just stop that. I mean, it's been diffused in every conceivable way, and Steve Kerr was all over that when he was talking to the media today at Oracle Arena.
Had we known that this was a possibility, that this was even in the realm of possibility, there's no way we ever would have allowed Kevin to come back. It's devastating, mostly for Kevin, obviously, but you know, I feel horribly for Rick as well, Celebrini, who is one of the best people I've ever been around and one of the smartest, brightest minds that I've ever been around. He's devastated. Bob, the team, we all are. But we made the decision collaboratively with all the information that we had, and we thought it was the right one.
It's a decision that they all have to live with. It's a decision that certainly affects team history, the NBA history that will be defined in the next 72 hours, the NBA's off season. It's a huge, huge, huge moment. It's a fork in the road, no doubt, in this league. And we're going to examine what happens in both directions. We're going to examine what the Warriors need to do to force a game seven. If you've already heard, by the way, halftime entertainment is going to be spectacular for game six and dead on money. Perfect. That's an audio clue, kids. That's what halftime is going to sound like, I believe. E40 missed a fab out there, and I am going to hold. I'm going to hold my breath until I see MC Hammer. I wouldn't be surprised to see some parachute pants out there when it's all said and done. I really, really wouldn't.
It was just so that you could be lightheaded enough to enjoy it when MC Hammer comes out.
Albie, you just said too short in my ear, like I needed a little help with that. Take the rest of the day off. Shame on you. I'm saying that MC Hammer could make a cameo appearance in what feels like an already perfect halftime act between Too Short.
He assumed when he played Blow the Whistle, everyone knew Too Short was coming.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much how we're working around here.
My apologies.
That's all right. It's going to be a perfect halftime. I just hope the two quarters of basketball in front of that halftime and the two quarters of basketball after that halftime will be just as satisfying. We will examine the man who will be calling all quarters of that. Mike Breen joins us today. Michael Irvin's going to join us today. Unfortunately, Steve Kerr has postponed until Friday. A name game? Woo! Raiders are going to be on Hard Knocks. We got an awful lot to talk about. I think the Padres are in town. This is a good day to be talking sports. We're going to be talking with you. 888-957-9570. That's the number. This is Matt Kolsky. What's up?
Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
How big of a night are we looking at Oracle Arena tomorrow night? I mean, it's amazing. Here we go, the final game. And I'm prepared for this one. Like, this one, I'm ready for it. Like, we've had the run-up of the last game at Oracle so many different times. It's been the last game of the regular season. Then it's the last first game of any playoff run. Then it's the last time the Houston Rockets are coming in here. Then it's the last time you're hosting game one of the Western Conference Finals. Then it's the last time you're coming back for the first game of an NBA Finals game. Now, look, this is the last time. This is really it. Here it is. We will never see the Warriors play another game inside of Oracle Arena after tomorrow night. Darren Rovell, a pair of floor seats purchased on the Warriors website for Game 6 of the NBA Finals Thursday night, $106,000 and $66.26. That's an awful lot of money. $106,000, $50,000 per seat for 2.5 hours of entertainment. I mean, I love Oracle. I love romance. I love the Golden State Warriors. I love the NBA Finals. I love sports being played for the biggest stakes humanly possible. Damn, that's an awful lot of money. I mean, not to the person who bought it, though, obviously.
No, I mean, clearly it's mad money for those lunatics. There is no event, including the births of my children, I would pay $50,000 a seat for.
That's because you don't have $50 billion.
Oh, if I had $50 billion, there's a lot of things I'd spend $50,000 on.
Yeah, and you'd have $50,000 left over for a seat to a basketball game, too.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but, you know.
This is what we learned, is you just have to be the 1% of the 1% to do these things at this level. That's how the world works now.
Well, and, you know, like my dad said, if you can't be rich, have rich friends.
So or that.
You know this person.
Find a sugar mama or daddy. That works, too.
I guess. I don't know that there's anybody I love enough or that loves me enough.
There's definitely not anyone who loves you enough.
If my wife had $50 billion, I doubt she would spend $50,000 on a seat for me next to her.
Well, that would give her the luxury of buying you a seat on the total opposite end of the stadium.
Oh, no. I'd be outside. She'd get me a ticket to the viewing party.
There you go. That's something.
I had somebody ask me a question. If there should be anything to interpret that Kevin Durant had his surgery in New York City. No, there is nothing there.
Yeah, that's where his doctor is.
Well, yeah, it's you should interpret the same thing as to when pitchers fly to Tuscaloosa to go see Dr. James Andrews in Alabama, because that's where Dr. James Andrews is. Kevin Durant's surgeon, who did Lisfranc? Was that wrong with his foot in Oklahoma City? Was it Lisfranc?
Right.
Okay, so the same surgeon who performed that surgery is the same surgeon that performed this surgery, and obviously Team Durant have ultra confidence in him. And honestly, there are very few hospitals in the world to leave the Bay Area to attend, but the New York Special Surgery Center, like, that's officially one of them. That's like, you don't have to say, like, well, why'd you go there? That's a butcher shop. No, it's phenomenal.
That's a butcher shop. That's good.
Yeah, it much like when you have $50 billion, you can spend $50,000 on a courtside seat. When you're Kevin Durant, you can pick whichever doctor you like the most anywhere in the country or even world and go see that guy. So that's what he did.
Absolutely.
Well, and I believe the team's picking up the cost anyway. So, and if you want to have him back, that's an expenditure you're okay with. I mean, you want the best guy doing this.
I would look at Craigslist myself, just see, you know, best price, best price available.
Dr. Ted.
Yeah. Dr. Nick. Hi, everybody. Jonathan, San Francisco. What's going on?
First time caller, I want to give a shout out to the Bay Area sports growing up. I'm a junior in high school. In second grade, 2010, Giants won their first World Series. Then I got into middle school. Warriors got on their dynasty, and it's just been a great I'm living in the Bay Area.
Jonathan, the golden age of Bay Area sports happened in the most developmental years of your life. There are very few generations who have ever grown up as sports rich as you have been able to grow up right here in the Bay Area. I mean, the three Giants titles, if that's the way your baseball allegiance is run, what you've seen from the Golden State Warriors is nothing short of historic. And you're right. I mean, if tomorrow night, in any way, shape, or form, is the end. What a 9-year run. What a decade. I mean, really, starting in 2010 with the Giants' first World Series and possibly ending tomorrow night at Oracle Arena. And look, is it the end? Not the end of the Warriors' competitive life cycle. It's not the end of their chances to be NBA champions. But it would feel like certainly you know, this is the last chapter of whatever this version is for sure. And
only if Kevin Durant leaves.
Oh, you're right. You're right. So if he does come back, then, you know, it's definitely a to be continued.
Right. Then it's like then we're doing like a instead of this, it's like the Star Wars universe where in between episode 8 and episode 9, you get Solo. You know, next year will be Solo because there's no Durant. It's like a side story in the expanded Warriors universe. And then you bring back Durant for the 2020-21 season. You've got episode 9.
It's like basketball purgatory.
Yeah, sort of.
You just got to go and hang out for a little while before you can get back to heaven.
Except purgatory is not, as I understand it, supposed to be pretty awesome, which I think next year's Warriors would still be.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of beige. A lot of beige everywhere.
I suppose there's somebody out there who can explain purgatory in a more excruciating way, but
beige is the perfect way to describe it.
I'm not sure that purgatory isn't a modified version of hell.
Right. I thought it was more hellish.
It's like hell light.
Kind of
like
the probably,
show.
I feel like this is a conversation.
Show is not light in any way, shape, or form. This is a walking, talking nightmare.
There are other stations that are more equipped for the purgatory part of the conversation, but I do think there's an instinct because Kevin Durant went down, because so much of the conversation this year has been about how, you know, nobody thinks he's coming back. It's tempting to be like, well, this could be it. And Oracle's closing and all these things are happening. But quite honestly, if Durant did, just for the sake of argument, sign long term here, we expect Steph and Clay and Draymond to all be back next year. And that would be pretty compelling, but certainly it would be even more so with the specter of Durant looming all season long.
Well, there's one thing that probably should cause you to pump your brakes, and I don't mean to be Johnny Contrarian again, but Bobby Marks, who knows more about the salary cap than any other living human, points out that if the Warriors re-sign sign the three that they have to sign, plus Curry, their luxury tax over the next 4 years would be $1.6 billion.
Yeah. We've known that, though.
No, $1.6 billion. Even Joe Lacob.
Right, that's a number to stop anybody.
But Joe Lacob has known that for 5 years, well, 3 years, and he's said at every opportunity, I will pay that luxury tax bill. Like, the luxury tax bill is not a surprise. They knew this was coming, and he's said consistently he'll do it. Now, he may have been lying, but that's what he said.
I think Joe understands that losing money today in terms of, you know, historical investment for tomorrow is a smart play. I mean, what is the intrinsic value of one more banner should they hang one as soon as they get to chase it? How about this? You could say that each banner over the last 2 years has been worth $500 million. Really? Every time the Warriors hang a banner, the team's overall value feels like it goes up $500 million. Well, you could say, well, that's because Chase Center's on the horizon now, or, you know, there's other forms of revenue being factored into that. But
all that's tied into winning. Chase Center's only on the horizon because of how good this team has become.
Full stop. You're correct.
Right? Yeah. No, Ray's looking at me like,
no,
that's crazy.
No, because I think they were planning. He made it clear when he bought the team in 2010
that he wanted to
relocate to the San Francisco.
But a golden.
And if they had gotten their way, they would already have a building at Pier 32. So I think they were moving either way.
Nothing greases the skids of progress quite like success.
Don't misunderstand me. Lacob, the day he bought the team, wanted to move the team to San Francisco. The specifics of Chase Center, of getting this beautiful building built and getting the money they needed raised and all of these things, it's part and parcel to the success of the team. Not necessarily three championships in 4 years, but a better team than the previous 20 years had brought.
Well, this gets into areas that I don't know that any of us really know, but I'm guessing that they would have been able to raise the money had they been able to do the proper political things here to get that building started by 2012, which would have been before any of the winning started. So I'm just saying that San Francisco was going to happen as long as he was alive. And it was probably going to happen with or without the winning. The winning makes it easier. There's no question.
Right.
It was going to happen.
Think how many times we heard of what was going to be the next candlestick. I mean, that was a 15-year discussion. three NFC title games and Harbaugh's got construction equipment swinging. You know what I mean? Like, it really, really does change the landscape of things. You know, I don't know how much you could correlate the wild card season of Giants baseball that never happened. What was it, 103 wins without a playoff appearance? And then the next thing you know, they're breaking ground at AT&T Park. So, I mean, winning does help around here, without a doubt. Now, savvy investors are easy to sell on any idea that sounds like money tomorrow for an investment today.
Bayfront property moves pretty well no matter what you're doing.
Sure. And you're absolutely right that Lacob's goal was always to move the team. I don't think there's any question that the success made the process easier.
I think it made it more appealing. I don't know that it made it any easier. And I think people are more excited about it because the team has won. But in terms of the building itself, that was going to get done winning or no winning. That's all I'm saying.
888-957-9570 is the number. The building obviously will represent the Warriors' future. It's going to change the landscape of entertainment coming to San Francisco forever. But that is next year. We've got one more time inside of Oracle Arena, and it's going to be special tomorrow night. I mean, everyone's going to try to win the contest to be in the last person out of there. It's going to be a lot of late nights at Oracle tomorrow. This is David in Concord. David, thank you very much for the phone call. You're on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, great. Comment and a question. The question, how on earth, what tactically do they do to stop Draymond from getting that seventh tee? And also my comment is, forgot the comment, so I'll come back to that.
All right, well, here's the answer to your question, David. Draymond shouldn't say a word to an official until next season. Or...
No, Game 7 he gets free.
Yeah, Game 7, go nuts.
In Game 7 he can do anything besides getting ejected from the game, and that's just fine because there is no Game 8 to be suspended for. So just get through tomorrow night, button your lip, and then unleash hell in Game 7 if it makes you feel good about yourself.
408 Texter says he couldn't find any doctors on Craigslist, but he did find a guy who'll cut you for free.
There you go. I mean, Durant should have called that guy. The Warriors, according to RealGM.com, in a story that was sourced by Frank Isola, who we've had on the show, the Warriors were prepared to pitch Kevin Durant on a long-term contract this offseason with the understanding that they would grant him a trade should he wish to leave the team at any point. Again, that's according to Frank Isola. I would imagine that there's got to be some sort of caveat, but a full no trade is something he probably wouldn't be interested in or anything like that. And yeah, I don't understand
what he's really even reporting there.
I'm not sure either, other than like, so the Warriors were going to deal whatever Kevin Durant wanted in his next contract, they were prepared to give him to keep him for as long as possible.
But
which
like,
I believe fits the model of every single front office in the league.
More importantly, show me the player anywhere near Durant's stature who can't get a trade if he wants to be traded.
Well, I guess the point of the story is to say they'll do whatever he wants.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's how these negotiations are going to be, to Damon's point.
I was sort of assuming that.
Everyone's going to do whatever he wants.
Well, I don't think the Warriors are going to, that's going to be their first play, but ultimately it will get there.
Sure.
Because Durant is represented by intelligent people, too.
Yeah, exactly. And you want him on your team. So, yeah, you'll do whatever you got to do.
Mike Breen, he's the play-by-play voice of ABC, ESPN. He is going to be calling Game 6 tomorrow night over at Oracle Arena. Mike Breen will be joining us at 3:45. Later next hour at 4:20, I mean, smoke them if you got them, Michael Irvin is going to stop on by. Why Michael Irvin? Michael Irvin is one of the biggest sports fans out there. He is fantastic. He's been all over the NBA Finals. Who knows more about the pressure of playing with injuries to win, getting booed off the veteran stadium turf? I mean, when it comes to feeling like a world-class athlete who's been through a few things, Michael Irvin knows a few things about that. Plus, we do have OTAs underway, which are certainly interesting. The news came out, gentlemen, during the show yesterday, and we were so... you know, deep into Warrior basketball. We could hardly get it. I just want to bring it up here for a moment before Mike Breen joins us. The Raiders are going to be on Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks is one of my favorite shows. Hard Knocks made the New York Jets look like the 1985 Chicago Bears. Hard Knocks turned Dave Campo into a weekly topic on a show where Dave Campo would hardly ever be a weekly topic. It is a well-done HBO show, and what the Raiders are going to look like on this, I can't even imagine. I've already read every article about it that you can conceive, and it feels like every article is somewhere in between, well, no team would want this at all, and, oh, the Raiders totally wanted this, and John Gruden, he gets up and has a pretend press conference in the mirror every day while he's brushing his teeth, and he can't wait to be in the spotlight again.
I think both of those things can be true. Yeah, no reasonable team wants this.
Yeah, but if you're Gruden, I think you're going, oh, I'm ready for my close-up at all times. I kind of like it.
I can't decide if I'm more excited for the madness of John Gruden, the just general bizarre insanity of Antonio Brown, or just fired up to hate Richie Incognito a lot for whatever he ends up being on screen for.
To me, it seems like it's just the John Gruden show, and he's going to be willing to embarrass people every week, most of them his own athletes, to make sure that everybody's thinking about John Gruden. I think in terms of team building, it's a disaster. But the Raiders have been a disaster in that way for so long that it would just be a different way to do it. Will it be a hoot? Probably, although I've always thought that teams are better and better at being disingenuous on Hard Knocks than they were at the beginning. I think they've learned all the tricks now. Hmm. That said, you know, when you get people like Antonio Brown, who is all about the attention, John Gruden, who is all about the attention, Richie Incognito, who can be all about the attention, you run the risk of basically turning that locker room into a casting call.
Correct.
And if you do that, you build up tons of resentments. And I think this is almost like the classic Raider idea, which is, man, we just need a lot of buzz before we get to Las Vegas, which means they're kicking the can of becoming a credible football operation down the road yet again, so that the people who still go out there every week in Oakland are going to get one more year of just degrading pie fights. It's one more middle finger to the sky to the people who basically, you know, supported this team through thin and thin. And I kind of feel crappy for them.
I've always felt bad for those fans. And any fan who really thought that anything was being done for you, all of this was, this is punting on two seasons. The show opens on the strip. This is only a preview. This is a teaser trailer for a movie that won't even open in your town. It's going to be a little bit bittersweet, and I could actually see it in some crazy ways backfiring. I could also see this being the, like, thank God for the Raiders that they actually are moving, because here's one of the first things that's going to be so obvious. The Raiders are such a second-class citizen in the NFL. Their training facility is tantamount to high school in the state of Texas. Like, my high school had a better weight room than the Oakland Raiders do in this thing that they practice in the back of, like, a Holiday Inn in Napa. It's the most un-NFL thing you've ever seen, especially when they're coming away from Tampa Bay, which was building a brand-new practice facility next to their practice fields. They come out of the Jets facility, which literally looks like the Salesforce Tower. They have, the NFL has been on, let us show you our empire on full display. Jerry Jones, your building, and you're basically going to have the Raiders prepping in a ramshack, rusty, I mean, like, you know what shouldn't be pointed out? That the Raiders actually train in Napa, yet they've never figured out a way to capitalize on that. Like, if the Dallas Cowboys trained in Napa, Jerry Jones would have his own wine bar up there. I mean, seriously, he'd have his own vineyard. There would be a train or airplane that chartered Dallas Cowboys season ticket holders to the greatest wine tasting experience known to man in Northern California on an hourly basis. The Raiders have this huge this advantage of Napa, and they've never even taken advantage of it. It's absolutely they're so special. It really is. This is going to be entertaining as hell. If you like content, we're going to get some for you. Thank you very much, HBO. Thank you, Oakland Raiders. You are always entertaining.
The finest organization in professional sports.
Sure. 888-957-9570 is the number. We're coming on back with one of the finest voices in professional sports. He is Mike Breen. He is the voice of ESPN and ABC, lead color basketball, lead play-by-play. He is the man, and we're talking to him next about the final game in the history of Oracle Arena, a game that the Warriors need to win if they want a Game 7 in Toronto. All that coming up courtesy of Fremont Bank. Full-service banking. No compromises.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Mike Breen is the voice of the NBA on ABC. He's got another call. Game 6 is at Oracle tomorrow night. Mike, thank you so much for joining us here on the Damon Bruce Show. I've got Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky along with me, and we're very happy to welcome you back to the Bay Area. I wasn't sure that was going to happen, but here we go.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Damon, I have to correct you. I've been on this crusade to stop. I mean, I appreciate you saying the voice of the NBA, but like I always keep saying, for Warrior fans, the voice of the NBA is Bob and Tim. For Toronto, it's Matt Devlin. For other announcers, you know, that's who the voice of the NBA is. I just happen to be privileged to be one of the voices, but not to be a stickler on that. But I feel strongly about that as having been a voice of a certain team for a long time. Those guys are as much a voice of the NBA as anybody.
Only a true gentleman guts his own introduction. Thank you, Mike. obviously, we were talking to Tim Roy yesterday. His call in Game 5 was fantastic. Listen to him. He sets it up for you.
Leonard, right side, stops. Pete VanVleet. VanVleet, one dribble, get the corner. Lowry is blocked by Draymond. The game's over! The game's over! The game is over. The Warriors have won. 106-105. Keep the lights on at Oracle. Dust those seats off. That old barn's got one more dance.
One more dance, Mike Breen. One more.
Oh, I love it. That's a great call from a great announcer. Tim and I have been buddies for a long time. He's so good. And that game the other night was, you know, we've done game sevens, we've all done big games, but that was one of the most memorable nights I think I've ever had in I think I'm doing this like 28 years now.
So you talk about a memorable night, and just in general, this series, Mike, has been, I think memorable might be the best word, but another one that jumps to mind is weird. That it doesn't seem to have developed a consistent narrative at all. The injuries have thrown it into upheaval. Is this about the weirdest final series you've been on the call for?
Yes, I mean, so many bizarre things happening that have nothing to do with basketball, storylines that are just so compelling. And then when you take into account, you know, what this championship for either team, what it means for them going forward with star players, it's just, it has so many different storylines that I find riveting. To me, it's been one of the more interesting finals because there's so many different things to talk about night in and night out. You know, when I prepare and the crew prepares with Jeff and Mark and our production team, you know, we have certain things we want to get in. Half the time you can't get them in because all these unusual, unique things are happening in the series that you don't have time to get everything in.
What is your sense of the way game sixes tend to play out? I'm throwing this series out because, as we all said, it's just madness on shoes. But in general, what do you look for when you're prepping out a game six? Because clearly one team's in position to close. The other one is a surprise win away from seven. How do you sort of frame that in general? And if you can do it, can you compare what you would have to do for tomorrow's game with any of the other game sixes you've had?
Well, it all depends on the makeup of the teams that are playing. You know, if it's different for a team that has been there in terms of what you would look for than for a team that hasn't been. And even though Toronto hasn't been, it's their first finals, they have a couple of key players who have won championships. So that's a big part of it as well. You know, in the playoffs, what I find is the team that loses the previous game usually comes out with more desperation. And so you know Toronto is going to come out with desperation. They are hurting from what happened. That's a game that they had, and they weren't able to close it out. Not only a game, but a possible championship. So they're going to be ornery. They've moved past it, but they're going to come out with desperation. The thing is, what I'm going to look for is, yeah, they're desperation, but they still know they have that home game seven in their back pocket. So how do they start the game? We've seen Golden State start each of the last two games with that desperation and come out like gangbusters. So just little different things like that. But I think at this point, the series has been so unpredictable. I mean, the home team's 1-4. It just you fight all season long to get home court advantage, and the road team keeps winning in the NBA Finals. So it really is one of the more unpredictable series from my standpoint.
Mike Breen here on 95.7 The Game. All guests appear on the Dial Pad guest line. Dial Pad helps you make smarter calls. The decision to play Kevin Durant is obviously a fork in the road for the Warriors, this series, the NBA's offseason, next several seasons. It's a major, major moment in NBA history, not just in the history of this series. Mike, as you watched it all unfold, did you attach any element of malpractice or poor decision-making to anyone in the process?
No, I can't imagine, guys, how, you know, that they had any thought that, you know, they're not, there's no way they're going to let him play the game if they thought there was any chance that that was going to happen. Now you can say, well, there's always a chance. Well, there's a chance for every player who goes out there that he could damage his Achilles. You know, in hindsight, was it a bad decision? It's hard to tell without knowing all the details, what the doctors know, without seeing the MRIs and the x-rays. Did they make a mistake? Again, it's hard to tell because we just don't have all the information. But what I so strongly believe is that there's no way anyone in that organization is sending him out there unless they felt that he was going to be fine. Yeah, was his calf sore? Maybe could he re-injure the calf? But other than that, I just don't think that. And we have all the time in NBA games. Sometimes injuries are just horrible bad luck, and it's a shame that we have to go into this and do the blame game. And I know it, I understand it, and there are reasonable questions to be asked, but you can't convince me that anybody with the Golden State organization didn't have anything but his best intentions in mind. And Kevin, obviously, too, wanted to play and felt he was ready to go as well.
And in terms of slugging it out, what'd you think of Kevon Looney, who was clearly in pain out there?
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen a player who you could tell every step was laborious for him. He was really hurting, so visibly hurting. I don't know if I've ever seen the respect that he has in that locker room for doing that, because that's clearly something that it's, if you can stick with the pain, you're okay. And again, it's just another story in so many of these. I mean, so many guys have been banged up. There's nobody who's feeling 100% right now. But to see what Looney is doing is it's inspiring.
And the first thing he says after the game is, yeah, I'm planning to play on Thursday. It seems insane. I want to quickly to jump back to KD. A lot of discussion, putting aside the blame game stuff, which I think we're with you on, a lot of discussion about the fan reaction. And if I'm not mistaken, you commented on it on the broadcast. So just being in the arena versus us watching it on TV, how did you view the way Toronto fans reacted to the injury?
First off, I was shocked. Their fans have been truly amazing. The city is just, it's so warm and welcoming. The fans have been great. They obviously love their team. And they've never been the type of team or fans that have done that in all the years that I've been going there. But they clearly responded inappropriately. And it wasn't like it was just, you know, a handful of fans. There was a big roar and a cheer twice from the fans. First when he went down, okay. But then when you get up and you could see that he had severely injured himself, that was disturbing. And one of the things that I was blown away by is the Raptor players, not the Warrior players, the Raptor players letting the fans right away, scolding them like, what are you doing? Are you kidding me? This is a competitor. He's one of our brothers. You can't be doing that. And they recovered and responded the right way by chanting KD, KD. But initially, it was really disappointing to hear.
Let me ask a journalism nerd question at this point. Given the way that Rachel Nichols' words about the Durant injury and what she'd come to learn from the Warriors and Doris Burke's words on the same subject and the way they were parsed so aggressively in the hours after the injury, is there something that broadcasters in general have to take from that in terms of what they feel comfortable reporting about an injury and what they no longer feel comfortable reporting about?
Well, what in particular, or which particular comments are you, or do you mean?
Oh, no, they were, I mean, they were basically, you know, well, I think Doris Rachel referred to, well, Steve Kerr told us that, you know, that there was no way he could, you know, get injured again. And the way that the outside world parsed that as, well, did he mean that he couldn't get injured at all or he couldn't injure the calf? I mean, just the way that a simple basic injury report turned into, you know, another, not debating point, but just a sort of a question of, well, what did she mean by that? You know, what did Steve Kerr mean by that? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think, again, it every case is different. It's depending on who you're getting the information from and the people that you trust. And it's also, too, there's two fine lines. There's the reporting of what you've been told, and this is what you've been told, and this is what you've seen. And then there's the editorial part. And it all depends on at what point in a telecast, what kind of show you have, whether it's radio or TV. Is there time for that editorial comment to present both sides? You know, for me, it's always been, there's very few things in life, and certainly in sports, that are definitive one way or the other. Everything's a gray area. There's two sides to every story. And I think if you have the time on whatever forum you have in the media, if you have the time to give both sides properly, and then you want to throw in your own opinion about which side you think is more realistic, I think that's the right way to do it. But I thought both of them handled it extremely well.
Mike Breen of the NBA on NBC. It's wonderful to have him on here. It's ABC. Let's get that right. We have an incredible amount of respect, I think, developed for the Toronto Raptors that maybe we didn't at the beginning of this series. And it's the efforts of Pascal Siakam. It's Fred VanVleet that have really surprised us. Is you're more familiar just being in the orbit of the Raptors so much more often than us. Have you been surprised by how ready they look for this moment?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think we all underestimated them. We all thought, hey, this is a good team. They got a great player. But nobody thought that they were a champion. I shouldn't say nobody, because some people did pick them. But the majority of people, even who saw them quite a bit, and I saw them quite a bit this year, you know, I thought they were good, but I didn't think they were a championship team. I think Marc Gasol's addition was really helpful in terms of getting them to there. But for a team that had so many new faces and a brand new coaching staff, and I know Nick Nurse was Dwayne Casey's assistant, but you know, he had a lot of different things. They were a different team in a lot of ways. He coaches differently than Dwayne Casey did. For them to come together in such a short time, you know, you look at the Warriors' success, it's so much about continuity. These guys, they've banded together, and it's because they have an extreme high basketball IQ. They've got really smart players, and there's no ego, starting with the superstar player. So, yes, they're better than I thought they were going to be. And the key thing is they just, as every, it seems every week, they get better and better as a team. And young guys like Siakam as an individual, Kawhi Leonard, the more comfortable he got on his new team, the better he got. The improvement from them, even when they were winning early in the season, from then to now, is really been fun to watch.
Mike, as you said, we are spoiled by the dulcet tones of Tim Roy. I think it's very appropriate that we have you in the building tomorrow night to describe what will be the last Warriors game ever played in Oakland. How much of a swan song do you plan on sending that building out on tomorrow night?
Well, we did quite a bit of it in game four, and I'm still blown away that they lost two games. I'm so happy that there's another one there. It's really one of the great buildings that I've been in. The fans are just, they're incredible. You guys know better than I do, for crying out loud, but it's been one of the special places to broadcast just because of the atmosphere. And these last 5 years, as somebody who loves team basketball and obviously basketball played on a high level, it's been the greatest show on earth over the last 5 years in that building.
Mike, thank you very much. You have called an awful lot of the memories in this great run, and we thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow night one last time at Oracle.
Guys, thanks for having me on.
Mike Breen of the NBA on ABC.